And now the Proms Saturday Matinee, live from Cadogan Hall here in London. It's presented by Christopher Cook.
A warm welcome to the last of this year's Proms Saturday Matinees, which resembles nothing so much as a birthday party. We've a programme of contemporary music here at Cadogan Hall by a trio of British composers, all of whom are celebrating significant birthdays. Alexander Gurr is 80, Oliver Nusson and Simon Bainbridge, being 60, have now qualified for their bus passes. Their music is played this afternoon by that tireless champion of new music, Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, conducted by Nicholas Collin. And they'll be joined by London Sinfonietta Voices and a trio of soloists for the first performance of a BBC commission, Simon Bainbridge's The Garden of Earthly Delights. Before The Earthly Delights, The Path to a Watery Grave, in two pieces by Oliver Nusson, Ophelia Dances and Ophelia's Last Dance. But first, Alexander Gurr's A Musical Offering, JSB 1985, which was originally commissioned by the Edinburgh International Festival to mark the 300th anniversary of the birth of Johann Sebastian Bach. Revisiting the techniques and the music of earlier generations of composers is a thread that runs through much of Alexander Gurr's music. In the composer's mind, vague memories fuse and grow into a new conscious creative idea, says Alexander Gurr. An artist is related to the tradition from which he comes, and this bond has little to do with time or progress. This is the road to one of this composer's most celebrated aphorisms, that all art is new and all art is conservative, which is actually a pretty good way of thinking about Bach. A Musical Offering, JSB 1985, is composed for four groups of players, each of which is separated from the others. On the left wing, so to speak, there's a sextet comprising flute and upper strings, and on the right, a brass trio. In the middle, a double bass is paired with piano, and two clarinets are entertaining percussion. Bach himself is not where the music begins. That's an earlier plain song, Alleluia, but the master soon asserts his authority over this music. The brass starts off a fugue in the opening prelude, and then ancient dance steps, dances to the rhythms of the gavotte, the gigue, minuet, and so forth in a set of variations. And the piece ends with a ricerca, which is based on the proportions that derive musically from Bach's own name, B-A-C-H. So, it's Bach to the future in Alexander Gurr's A Musical Offering. Will you welcome, please, Nicholas Collin to conduct members of Birmingham Contemporary Music Group.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
a birthday offering from a contemporary composer to a Baroque master. Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, conducted by Nicholas Collin, has just played Alexander Goehr's a musical offering, JSB 1985. And Alexander Goehr, who's here at Cadogan Hall this afternoon, celebrated his own birthday, his 80th birthday, just over a week ago. On the podium, Oliver Nussen has been a doughty champion of Alexander Goehr's recent music. And Nussen is, of course, a composer as well as a conductor. "I like conducting and working with other people," he told one interviewer. "It's a very good way of stopping yourself from being solipsistic." But as Nussen has also said, "I wish I'd written a hell of a lot more than I have done. I'd like to get to 50 pieces, ideally." Well, we'll be 18 short of 50 numbered works later with the second of two pieces that are named for what is surely the saddest woman in all Shakespeare, Ophelia, whose unrequited love for Hamlet tips her into madness and eventually a watery grave. First, though, Nussen's Opus 13. Ophelia Dances was commissioned by Serge Kovinsky's Foundation and given its first performance in New York in 1975. Why is Ophelia dancing? That's Nussen's own question in a note that he's written about the piece. The piece, he says, is partly an instrumental response to Shakespeare's description of Ophelia chanting snatches of old tunes as one incapable of her own distress. But it seems that Nussen also wanted to write a piece whose light-headed and giddy qualities would suggest a crossing of the line that divides laughter from tears. The old tunes that Nussen weaves into his dance come from Schumann's Carnival and from two late pieces by Debussy, La Boite aux Joujoux and Gigue. Ophelia has four dances in all following an introduction, and the piece, which is played continuously, ends with a slow extended coda. Nicholas Collin now conducts members of the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group in a performance of Oliver Nussen's Ophelia Dances. Though this be madness, yet there is method in't. Ophelia Dances by Oliver Nelson. Nicholas Collen, conducted members of the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group. And in next Saturday's prom at the Royal Albert Hall, which is conducted by Oliver Nelson, you can hear his third symphony, and he'll also be conducting Alexander Gerz's Metamorphosis. And now, Ophelia's Last Dance, composed in 2010, but using a melody that dates back to 1974, and which Oliver Nelson had originally intended to include in his third symphony. Some of the discarded melodies from that symphony, in fact, found their way into Ophelia's Dances, but one remained an orphan. Although, as Nelson has said, it continued to haunt me from time to time over the years. In March 2003, the composer's wife, Sue Nelson, died, and the orphaned tune came to have a deeper significance for the bereaved husband. It reminded me of happier times, he said. So the tune was given a tiny frame of its own to be shared with listeners other than those in my head. In time, that fragment developed into a larger piece to become Ophelia's Last Dance, a composition for solo piano that brings together a number of other homeless dance fragments, which Nelson says are related more by history and mood than anything more concrete. What holds them together are a series of ingenious transitions to and from recurrences of the original melody. The result, wrote Andrew Clements, at a concert to celebrate Oliver Nelson's 60th birthday this year, is a gorgeous, nostalgia-drenched, Scriabin-like waltz, exquisitely played by Hugh Watkins. Well, as you'll probably realise at home, as well as here in the hall, we have an extremely busy stage this afternoon, and it takes us a little while to move from repositioning for each of the separate pieces. But the piano is now in place, and we can join the pianist Hugh Watkins here at Cadogan Hall to play Ophelia's Last Dance in this prom Saturday matinee.
Thank you.
Hugh Watkins played Ophelia's last dance, Oliver Nussen's birthday present to himself on the occasion of his 60th birthday this year. And now, a garden of earthly delights and a world premiere from the third of this afternoon's birthday composers, Simon Bainbridge. Hieronymus Bosch painted the Garden of Earthly Delights, which hangs in the Prado Museum in Madrid, towards the end of his life. He died in 1516. When this triptych is closed, we see the third day of the creation of the world with God the Father as its creator. It's grey, an unfinished world. But open the triptych, and the three inside panels shimmer and glow with colour. To the left is paradise with the creation of Eve, and in the heart of the Garden of Eden, the fountain of life itself. How different is the Garden of Earthly Delights in the large central panel? Here is every form of human temptation, and all manner of worldly pleasures can be indulged in by fallen mankind, with all manner of strange creatures joining them in their wickedness. The wages of sin is there for all to see and to fear in the third panel to the left. This is hell, a place of pain and of darkness and eternal torment, a kind of eternal torture chamber. Well, these are the worlds that Simon Bainbridge and his collaborator, the artist and writer John Ross, have made into music, and both are with me now to talk about the piece. Simon, can I ask you first, how exactly did the collaboration come about?
It was over dinner, actually, with this gentleman here, and he said, how about the idea of turning Garden of Earthly Delights into a musical composition? And we started talking about it quite a lot after that.
Had you thought, John, that it would be a piece that could lend itself to a musical interpretation?
Well, yeah, I'd lived with the Garden of Earthly Delights since my days at art school, and it was one of those things that I think I played in the Garden of Earthly Delights for many years, and when the thought of putting it in...
I don't think we should go too far down that, Tim.
Oh, yes, we will.
At what point did you decide that Hieronymus Bosch was going to be a focal point in the piece?
Well, the fact is that we went with the expert in sort of Flemish painting at the Prado, and she really didn't know what it was about. She couldn't really put a finger on exactly what. She kept using the word fecundity, and so we didn't get the meaning of it. It had to be the person that was singing it. It had to be Hieronymus himself that was singing it. That's what we tried to get over, Simon.
Yes, I mean very very early on, I was thinking about the colour of a Bosch. We had to establish a character that would take the listener on a journey through the painting. And I just couldn't get this wonderful sound out of my head of mezzo-soprano and countertenor entwined polyphonically for most of the composition. And out of that, some other very strange instrumentation emerged, like bass flute, bass oboe, electric guitar, accordion. All these strange instruments, for me, evolved out of the colour of the painting, which, and indeed influenced the harmony of it.
It is, as you say, a triptych, and the painting's a triptych. So how does the music follow, as it were, the form of Bosch's late masterpiece?
Well, I tell you, we start off with the Garden of Earthly Delight. The creation of the world.
That's when it's closed.
When we see the grey. It's called Piece in Four Panels. That's its abstract title. So you start there, and then you go into the Garden of Eden. You arrive at the end of the Garden of Eden, and you go on a helter-skelter journey through this extraordinary multi-layered environment of humanity. And then you'll hear the music gradually descend into the final section, Hell.
And we also have a chorus.
Yes.
What is their role?
The chorus is there as a shadow and support for the countertenor and mezzo-soprano, commentating on their text, illuminating it at times.
Simon Bainbridge, John Ross, thank you both
very much indeed.
In this first ever performance of Simon Bainbridge's The Garden of Earthly Delights, Members of Birmingham Contemporary Music Group are joined by London Sinfonietta Voices. The soloists are the mezzo-soprano, Lucy Schaefer, and Andrew Watts, counter-tenor. Sam West is the narrator, and the Garden of Earthly Delights is conducted by Nicholas Collin.
Hieronymus Bosch. Who is he? Let me speak to you through his strange, very strange dust. I was probably born in Hertogen Bosch in the low, very low countries in 1453, from where I quit this mortal box in that flaming August of 1516. It was black heat and thick turpentine, the doctors recorded on a stone lozenge. As a boy, my world was filled with plague, pustule, and pestilence. My blue skies days were shot dark with locusts and night terrors. My sour bed was a damp, cold toad. The slow death rattle was the rhythm to my dancing soul in those days. The last rites were my early beginnings. I learned early to nimbly dodge the iron wheels of the death cart. I never attended school. I preferred the dark tutelage of owls. In my secret oak, I studied the systematic examination of the forbidden areas. By rote, I recited the unknown languages of the other side. On Good Fridays, St. John the Divine guided me through his dark nights of the soul. Dante taught me to read by fireworks. My timing was set to the dull minutes of the sexton's shovel. I prowled the night fields in my search of sorcerer's magic palette of colours, crushing rare beetles, bottling the seepage of wicked thorn trees, juicing the bladders of adders, stealing the spit of night jars, mixing my magic muds into the colours of flesh, laughter, and the grey, dismal grave. Now, if you will, picture there my magnum opus, my great work, the great garden of all earthly delights. Listen. Can you hear the paint speak to you down the centuries? Me, Hieronymus Bosch, painter, alchemist, conjurer, sorcerer, magician, priest and gardener, a great, great gardener, the gardener of the wild, wild, flowering, fruiting asylum of this garden. See, I plant my garden with human folly. I water those fragrant fringes with the rich, filthy liquor of human lusting. I prick out the weak seedlings with my green fingers, forked. I pleach feeble princelings to the rough Janus bark of my two-faced plum trees. I work in the well-rotted muck heap of bleating human stupidity. See there, the dark cherries in my Judas fruit trees. They're the bleeding holes I grafted from the hands of my Messiah. Thank Christ for cadmium red. My glass house is my temple, my studio, my cathedral. My garden paths, the cold cinders of the long, long lost what might have beens, of man's time pished away on this God's earth. All this, laid out upon the crazy, crooked, corrupt, crapulent, shite-mongering corpse of human, all too human humanity. Still the madcap laughs. Still the nightshade drapes and murders me with her heaven-sent poisons. Still the bee blithely sucks at the flower's mouth. Still I stand and watch the bees being. Being and nothing. Oil and mercy. Moons and lepers. Pigs and trumpets. God's truth and spoonbills. Donner and Blitzen. Blood and soil. Yes. Yes, blood and soil. Look. Listen. My lovely garden. Come now. I ask you to listen hard. Listen as the ice slowly melts at the beginning of time, at the birth of the earth. The gates of my garden are opening.
Thank you. at my ears like a wetted blood. The mist of war.
A story of heaven and hell that ends with the hope of redemption. The world premiere of Simon Bainbridge's The Garden of Earthly Delights, a collaboration between the composer and John Ross. Soloist for the mezzo-soprano, Lucy Schaefer, and Andrew Watts, counter-tenor. Samuel West was narrator, and London Sinfonietta Voices and Birmingham Contemporary Music Group were conducted by Nicholas Collins.
And that was Christopher Cook with the Proms Saturday Matinee at London's Cadogan Hall. This is BBC Radio 3. It's a little after 4:30. Time now for Saturday Classics, presented by James Jolly.
There are some artists for whom music seems such an all-embracing concern that you can imagine them doing little else. Daniel Barenboim and Andre Previn both spring to mind, pianists come conductors whose schedules induce light-headedness to mere mortals. And to that duo, and of course there are many others, you might add the name of Vladimir Ashkenazy, another pianist-conductor who celebrated his 75th birthday on July the 6th. Over the next two Saturday afternoons, I'll be celebrating Ashkenazy's art as both pianist, in the roles of soloist, concerto partner, song accompanist and chamber musician, as well as conductor, a task he undertakes more these days. Today I thought I'd focus on the music of Ashkenazy's country of origin, Russia, and what could be a more appropriate curtain raiser than Shostakovich's festive overture.
Thank you.
The festive overture by Dmitri Shostakovich, Vladimir Ashkenazy, conducted the Philharmonia Orchestra, an ensemble whose conductor laureate he is, and one of the first orchestras Ashkenazy conducted when he added this second string to his bow, or should that be another string to his piano. Ashkenazy's relationship with the piano started when he was a boy of six, and his talent was recognised early, leading to study at the Central Music School in Moscow, and then the city's conservatoire when he numbered Lev Oborin among his teachers. The 1950s saw a string of competition wins, second place in the International Chopin Competition, first prize in the Queen Elizabeth Competition in Brussels, and finally, in 1962, joint first place with the British pianist John Ogden in the Tchaikovsky Competition in Moscow. The following year, Ashkenazy and his Icelandic wife Thorun, whom he'd met as a fellow student in Moscow, decided to leave the Soviet Union and settled first in London and then in Iceland, before making their home in Switzerland. And it was during the 1960s that Ashkenazy launched his relationship with Decca, the record company that has run like a thread throughout his career. An early project that has stood the test of time with great resilience was the complete music for piano and orchestra by Rachmaninoff, which also marked the start of a new relationship, a fruitful one, with the conductor Andrei Previn. From that set, here's Rachmaninoff's Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, a performance that finds pianist on top form and the LSO responding with great elegance and a host of orchestral colours.
Thank you. Thank you.